Nothing is over.
Nothing is over. Okay, wrong podcast sequel. Relax. Wrong podcast.
I know.
All right. Well, welcome to
I'm not invited to that one.
Okay. Welcome to an episode of The Last of the Action Heroes. No, actually, what's this one called? Oh, yeah. Welcome to an episode of The Last of the Action Heroes. This is the flagship show, as I say, for each of these episodes. There's only been a handful that I've recorded. Seiko just released an episode on our feed at the time of this recording where you and Katie from the One More Round podcast, my co-host there, you guys covered Romancing the Stone. You guys did a fantastic job. Seiko, you are the... you're not my co-host on this because before we get to you, I just want to say great job on that episode, by the way. You and Katie...
Thank you very much. On behalf of Katie, I thank you.
She's great.
We're very proud of her.
Katie's great. What I liked about this is you on your own did exactly what I want other hosts to do on this network. So if the odd guy that actually listens to this episode, and not just their own, and let me just say, I'm a little bit miffed that a lot of the guys on this channel don't listen to other people's shows. I understand if you don't want to listen to every episode because some movies might not be of interest. I get it. But look, who's not a fan of Con Air? You guys should be listening to Con Air episodes. Who's not a fan of Chuck Norris? You should be listening to the episodes I covered on Chuck Norris. What I'm getting at is, come on, co-hosts of other shows, show your support, because I know you don't listen to everything. Not everything, or
well,
nothing.
Well, I do have some good news for you, Ryan.
What's your news?
Because I will be producing other episodes. I have an episode planned with your other co-host from the Rocky thing, which is Kyle. Mm-hmm. And we will be doing Karate Kid in the very near future.
Yes.
The original Karate Kid. And the reason we're doing that is because Kyle actually studies with Pat Morita's stunt double.
Yes.
So it was a given. We just had to do Karate Kid. And I've also got some things planned with our new friend who does the 90s action movie stuff.
Scott Murphy.
Our Scottish friend in New Zealand. We will be covering Highlander.
Perfect.
Because the minute I found out that guy was Scottish, I just had to do Highlander with him. Maybe if I can talk him into it, and if I can provide enough high-quality booze, Jack will do a Harrison Ford movie with me.
Oh, Jack's great. He's great. He's a drunk Bond pod podcaster. He's awesome. Jack's awesome. Okay, now, I just harassed the other co-host. I didn't mean to do that. But what I want to get at is exactly what you're doing, Seiko. It's exactly what I hope other podcasters will do on this network from the other shows who all do a great job, but I want to hear their skills outside of their topics, meaning I do a lot of Stallone stuff, of course, with the Rocky and Rambo. So I love actually covering films that aren't Sly, because I love film, and I love films in general, of course. Sly just happens to be my, you know, I grew up with him. He was my screen icon hero in my youth, so that's why I'm covering him as a podcaster. But that being said, there's films on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast that I've actually had a wonderful time covering, and I purposely have chosen films that, I haven't seen. So this is the big thing. These are films that like, I legit haven't seen. Every one of the ones I've covered, I actually haven't seen. So it kind of forces me to watch films I haven't seen yet in a good way, and gets me to watch them and then talk about them. This movie that we're covering today is Southern Comfort. Southern Comfort was a movie I've never heard of. The reason why we talked about Bolt to the Head is because, of course, Walter Hill directed that film. And you made the comment, hey, have you guys, you know, heard of, or I forget what it was asked, but you brought up the movie.
Well, of course, well, it's easy to bring up. I have watched this movie many times. That's one of the reasons why I really, really, really wanted to record this with you, because it is utterly brilliant. Because Walter Hill is really underrated, is one of the greatest directors of all time, especially in the action genre that we prefer to cover. And there's another interesting element to Southern Comfort that will pique all our interest. You're the first blood guy, and in it you have Rambo, and he is set upon by the National Guard. This movie is about the National Guard being set upon by a bunch of Rambos. It's just amazing when you watch this. All those, I mean, you've already done a few episodes on the National Guardsmen. You've already wondered about how they operate, and especially this notion of part-time soldiers operating in their own country. Well, in this movie, they actually explore this very thing, and it goes awry in just a horrible way. I find it amazing. Now, you're in the military. I was in the military. I was also in the reserves, which is similar to the National Guards because right. They're used in much the same way. I was perfectly happy doing that, but they discontinued it and they've recently started it up again and offered re-entry, but I don't get the same rank. So thank you very much. I've had my time filling sandbags, but it is an interesting notion to see a movie about guardsmen lost in the woods. You've watched this now for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
What's your first impression?
Well, we'll get to that. I want to address your First Blood comment. This is interesting because First Blood, as you know, was based on a novel that was written in 1976. And Walter Hill claims that he wrote this screenplay. Oh, I'm hearing myself in the background. I'm hearing myself on your speakers, I think. Do you have headphones in? Yeah, I'm hearing the... So it's going to record me hearing me.
Do I need to turn my speakers off?
Well, then you won't hear me. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I hear myself through your speakers coming back to me, so that's going to record as well. Like, the audience on the iTunes will hear that. They hear me going, bup, 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 like an echo. So if that's why I wear headphones. Does that make sense? Do you have headphones? Seiko, I'm asking you, do you have fucking headphones so you can wear those?
I have headphones all over the place.
Yeah, I need you to plug them in so I don't hear
just
myself.
A second.
Okay. I appreciate it, or else people are going to hear an echo.
Anything for you, Ryan.
Oh, so, it's not... Jeez, would you want to hear an echo? I guarantee you would probably come back. You would come back and say, Ryan, I heard you in the background. Why didn't you correct that? Why didn't you say anything to me? So I am.
Yeah, so I always complain about how crappy your recordings are. That's very true. But that's just my usual, what you guys call trolling. I just call, you know, friendly critiquing.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Okay.
So did I fix it or what?
It actually sounds better even with your headphones on because it's drowned out the background noise. I'm glad you thought of it, Seiko. Thank you for bringing it up. Jesus.
I'm just good at following orders.
Speaking of First Blood, like we were saying with the novel was written in 76. Walter Hill says that he wrote the screenplay 6 years previous. But of course, David Morrell, the author of First Blood, would be unaware of that script. So this movie still came out after the book was written. So the book was on the bookshelves.
And it's set in 1973.
Right. So it's just very interesting that you have two different authors working. And this happens all the time in music, movies, where you almost have – because it's in the psyche, right? This would be in the psyche of any creator at the time. There's a Vietnam War going on, and of course there is a National Guard, and there's soldiers. And all this stuff is happening. But there are some similarities between how the soldiers, the National Guardsmen, are taken out. Some of the things are very similar to what happens in the First Blood film. So First Blood comes out a year after Southern Comfort, but the events that happened in the book happened in the film as well. So are you disrobing for the camera, Seiko? Is it like,
no, I'm not.
Do I have to put a not safe for work? What? This is going to go on YouTube. People are going to see you.
I don't care.
Look at this guy. Talk about a weird flex. He's literally flexing.
There. I fixed it.
Okay. Well, looks okay.
You can just see me from the neck down. I know how modest you are, Ryan.
Yeah, keep your hands where I can see them. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, did you think...
I'm also not wearing pants, by the way.
I knew you were going to... Did you think that there was any plagiarism here on either author's part, or this was just a time of just two different creators and two different spheres, two different parts of the world, created
they
very similar...
I think they were completely unaware of each other.
I agree. Okay, I just wanted to get that.
And there were a ton of... I mean, the Platoon script was also... riding around Hollywood. As you know, I cover the Arnold podcast. In it, we discuss Conan the Barbarian. And Conan the Barbarian the script was originally written by Oliver Stone. And he did Conan the Barbarian in hopes of selling his Platoon script.
Okay.
Ultimately, they couldn't get the movie sold and they brought in John Milius. But people woke up to how high the quality of the script was, and ultimately that movie did get made. Platoon did get made, and it's probably one of the best Vietnam-era movies ever done.
Yeah.
Probably even better than Apocalypse Now.
Pros and cons for both films, but I think as far as digestible, sit-down, one-time viewing, I love Apocalypse Now. The Redux version is my favorite version. But it's an art film more than anything else, and I think Platoon is just a tighter... stronger, more brutal in many ways film. It's just it's a gut punch. Anyways, okay.
Yeah, but so, it does help that Oliver Stone was actually a soldier and knew what Vietnam was.
I agree.
Here's another thing that brings us back to Southern Comfort. It's not about Vietnam. And Hill has gone on record stating many times, no, and I even said that to the crew, no, this is not about Vietnam. This is not an allegory. This is about guys lost in the swamp. and who just happened to be in the National Guard. In many ways, it's much more akin to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which was a huge, huge movie in the 70s. It's kind of a very stalkerish movie. It's like The Hills of Eyes. Those were movies that were very big during the time that this thing was in production.
I wonder how many people are listening to this episode haven't seen the film.
Many, because this film bombed.
As we discuss the film, we're going to be very spoilerish. And I hate it when people do that in podcasts. I don't usually do that because it goes without saying. But I know there are some people that listen to some of my episodes on this feed that haven't seen the films, because we kind of take the mick out of a lot of the films, especially some of those sly films like that are, you know, like Escape Plan 3. I know people have listened to that episode who have no intention of watching the film. So we make fun of it or whatever it is, and we spoil by the movie by doing that. But with this film, I just want to make a real warning or spoiler warning to stop listening and go watch this film. Then come back and listen. I hate it when people do that, but I really want to do that for this one because it's legit. Mm-hmm. I legit love this film.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
No, I'm so relieved.
No, I love this film. It's right up my alley of films. Mm-hmm. I love this type of film. I went in it blind. I didn't even know it existed until you said, hey, we should do Walter Hill's Southern Comfort. And I'm like, great, let's book it. And I went in blind. I didn't even know it had it was about soldiers. I didn't even know when it came out. I knew nothing about this. Anyway, so I went in blind. So I want all the listeners who listen to the show who haven't seen this film.
Yes, go watch it.
Because we're going to spoil it. And the less you know, don't watch the trailer. Don't even watch the trailer. Nothing. Just go in blind. Okay.
Yes, but be comfortable with the fact that this movie is endlessly rewatchable. It doesn't bore you
You don't want to be spoiled going to that. I think it's more of a fun experience because I had no idea where this film was going. I had no idea how it was going to – like I knew nothing. Watch this film blind was kind of a fun experience. About 20 to 30 minutes in, yeah, I got the vibes of this is – and I know some of the movie posters now we're in spoiler territory. So I know some of the movie posters after my research talked about how this was the Deliverance. This was like 6 years ago we had Deliverance. Now we have this film type thing. I get that kind of comparison. It's a fair comparison. So why don't you give the quick synopsis here, Siegel, what this film is about?
Well, it's a group of reservist soldiers carrying blanks who are on a training mission, who are a bunch of undisciplined and who misbehave and piss off the locals. They're not having it. At some point, they just get hunted down by these people. Very quickly, they get paranoid and lose all cohesion, and then they get just picked off one by one. And the only two guys who have a little bit of a brain in the entire group, they manage to get out, but don't ask how. It's set in Louisiana.
Yeah.
In the first few scenes, you get this new guy in the group who's apparently been kicked out of the Texas National Guard for some reason. So you get this pride thing happening where the sergeant says, well, you know, I can understand why you'd hate the Texas National Guard, but saying this shit about the Louisiana National Guard, no, that's not going to cut it.
Play that scene right now. This is a sequence here. The guy you're talking about is played by Powers Booth. Mm-hmm. Wonderful actor. I don't know his stuff very well. Like I admit, I don't know Powers Booth.
I do. I'm a big Powers Booth fan.
Watching this film, I'm a bigger fan, if that makes sense. I did know him, of course, one of my favorite films of all time.
Like Red Dawn?
Nope.
It's not the Red Dawn is not in your top five?
Top five? No. Come on.
Ryan, I have to take you to school.
No, you can take me all you want. I'll fail your class. But, Seagulls, I don't even know if I've passed anything in your life of school life. Anyways, so Red Dawn is not in my top five. It's a fun film, but top five, come on. That's ridiculous. You're going to talk about The Godfathers and all everything else? No, Red Dawn's not up there. Okay. However, Powers Booth is in Ryan Rebalkan, top five film is Tombstone. I love Tombstone.
Sure.
I'm a huge Western fan. In fact, I'm very close to doing a Western film podcast because I love Western so much. Tombstone, huge fan of it. And of course, Powers Booth plays Curtis Bill. Yeah, Curtis, those Western
names. Those are historical figures you're talking about.
That's
right.
That's right. Yeah. So, of course, he was also in Deadwood, and Walter Hill had some spots in Deadwood. So, I love Powers Booth and his job in the Westerns. That's kind of where I know him from. So, I haven't really seen him outside of Deadwood, and Tombstone is what I'm getting at. So, I've seen him in this film, of course, in military outfit and younger. This is 41 years ago, this film.
If you like Powers Booth in this movie, go watch the miniseries Attila. Yes, he plays a Roman general in that.
Add it to my ever-growing queue. Here we go. So we got the introduction of Powers Booth playing
Corporal Hardin.
What a great name, Hardin. So he's about to introduce himself. He's from Texas, so he was basically in the Texas National Guard, and he's reporting for duty here at the Louisiana National Guard. And I find this very interesting. This whole movie takes over 2 days and two nights. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
All these events. What I like about this
48
show,
hours.
48. Yeah, speaking of Walter Hill, 48 hours.
It's not an accident.
Yeah, probably not. So 2 days. But what I love about this film, we see this breakdown, this mental breakdown of these quote-unquote soldiers in this National Guard happen in a very short period of time. If you almost like watch the movie of they are in Vietnam, I know it's not a Vietnam film, but if you were to almost watch the events where the Cajun locals are not shown or talked about and just replace it with the Vietnam villagers or Viet Cong.
Yeah.
So if you were to replace the locals in Vietnam with the Cajun locals in your mind, with how the soldiers are acting and make it seem like they've been in deployment for 5 to 6 months, that's what's kind of crazy about this film. It's almost like if the film in general isn't real life at all. It's like a fantasy because people, they're not going to have this kind of breakdown in 48 hours, but they're acting like they've been in war for 6 months. They act like they've been at war for 2 years or in like the way they just like, it's crazy, man. It's insane. You know, like I love how the guys go PTSD because these guys are not military in the sense of full time. They are.
Okay, so these are part-time.
That's right.
Part-time soldiers. These are guys who would not cut it in the real military. These are guys who would be Section 8, real quick.
I'm not sure about all of them. I think
the sergeant is the capable guy, maybe Hardin, but the sergeant is actually portrayed as a veteran who's earned medals. I think they suggest he has a Bronze Star, which makes sense that he would run a bunch of misfits like this. But even in the first scene, you see them practicing with ordnance. Now, these are blanks, but they are firing off blanks in the middle of a field, and people are walking by.
Yes, that's all now, improper. You're not allowed
that's
to
That's improper.
Yeah.
That is just completely unprofessional.
You probably know this. The first thing I noticed right away is when you shoot blanks, you're supposed to have a cover on the top of your rifle where the muzzle is. Because it suppresses the gas, and that's how the blanks...
Yeah, we would have a red mount on the end of the gun.
Ours is yellow. Same idea. That way everyone can see, hey, this weapon is loaded with blanks. So there's two reasons why you have this cork, of a metal cork at the end of your rifle. One is it pushes the gas back to help reload the next round. A real bullet doesn't need that, but because it's not a real bullet, it doesn't have enough gunpowder and gas pressure to reload itself. So that's number one. Number two is if a real round was accidentally loaded or in the weapon, it would explode, but at least you would stop that bullet from coming out, the projectile.
Killing someone.
Yeah, it would hit the end of the metal. There'd be explosion of metal and everything, but it's a lot less lethal than a bullet hitting.
These measures are there because accidents have happened. That's how the son of Bruce Lee died.
Yes. Or Mr. Alec Baldwin with Rust.
Ugh.
So
well,
now to keep in
let's
mind,
not bring that nasty shit up.
So to keep in mind, though, in movies, you're saying, well, Ryan and Seiko, well, none of these movies that you watch from, you know, the Die Hards, the Lethal Weapon, all these action films that we love on this channel, they don't have any of those things. No, movie weapons are different than real weapons. So all we're getting at is because this is a military film, this is not a – they're not Hollywood weapons like you would see in the great scene in Heat.
Yes. Like, that scene is on purpose. That scene – portrays them as inefficient, undisciplined, careless, because it's careless.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you end up in the stockade if you pull something like that on a superior officer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he shot it at the, I think at the guy's a sergeant. If you do that, your career is over. Yeah. That's not funny. That's not funny, haha. That's end of the line for you.
Yeah.
That's not even a gig. That's straight down to the stockade. You can explain that one to the MPs, and they never laugh at your jokes. So that's what we're getting in like the first couple of minutes, a bunch of yahoos, and they're on a training mission, and they really don't want to be there. The bright guy in the bunch, which is Private Spencer, he's already lined up a bunch of hookers at a shack someplace, so, you know, they'll be entertained. And that's kind of a showcase of the who's who of that bunch of people who are we will be following in the next few hours. They all react differently to it. And the one who reacts the most is the guy played by Alan Autry, Coach Bowden, who will have who already is shown to have mental problems, but things will only get exacerbated once they step into shit.
All right, so now we're going to show you the Powers Booth character, and then we'll show you really quickly that find of the blanks kind of mishap, and then we'll skip ahead a little bit.
Soldiers Casper, not typing.
I was told to report to you, Sergeant. I'm Harden. Rifleman Charles Harden, Corporal. Where are you from, Charlie? El Paso.
Is that right? Well, tell me how you like being in the Louisiana National Guard all of a sudden.
I don't. But then I didn't much like being in the Texas Guard either.
Well, not liking the Texas Guard makes sense. Not liking the Louisiana Guard can get you into trouble with me. You got that?
Got it.
And you get your butt on over to Second Squad, you'll recon with them. Casper, show them the way. Introduce them to the boys.
Right.
Harden's been introduced. He's going to go off and join the boys.
Powers Booth, just cool as shit.
He's great in this.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
What a badass.
I love
only steers and queers come from Texas, and he's not a queer, I can tell you.
No. Jeez. I have to edit that. You can't be.
Yes, I can. I can say anything I want. This is a podcast.
Oh, is that how it works? We can say whatever we want? Oh, okay.
Yes, we can. Freedom of speech.
Well.
Until they muzzle us.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll be editing this. Okay. Let's go to the blank. Let's go to the firing of the blank sequence.
Right. Yeah, look at them. They walk right through it.
Anyways, that's a fun little sequence there.
Wow, great fire discipline that, right? It just emptied a whole magazine in one go.
Do you want to talk about Keith Carradine?
Sure. You mean his brother?
Well, his half-brother, David Carradine, which is...
Yeah, they're related. The name is not an accident.
No, it's not. So they're half-related. I'm not sure if it's the father that they share or the mother that they share. I'm not sure. But they're half-brothers.
I think the mother.
Okay.
Well, they have the same name, so it's probably the father. Either that or they just use the same actor name. That could be true. People make up their names in Hollywood.
Keith, yeah, that's a great spot to pause on there. So let's hear Keith Carradine. I love the way Keith Carradine acts. Of course, he was in Deadwood as well. He was also in Dexter, if you remember. He played a role in Dexter there.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, great actor.
He was the FBI guy.
That's right.
Dexter has a sister, and she always dates the wrong guys.
Yeah.
So, of course, she falls in love with Keith Carradine, who's like decades older and is sort of a father figure.
That's right. Daddy issues there. So Keith Carradine, again, a great actor. I've seen a few of his films. What I'm finding as I'm doing these episodes of The Last of the Action Heroes is as I go back in time, a lot of these films, early films, I mean, this came out when I was 5 years old, so I didn't see it, never heard of it till now. What I like is seeing some of these aging actors of today and their yesteryears, when they were the stars and when they were running Hollywood. It's just cool to see these guys, like Keith Carradine, is a little bit cooler than I thought he was. You know what I mean? Like I misunderstood who these actors were until you see them in these films. Keith plays, do you remember the character's name?
Spencer,
that's right.
Yes.
So he's kind of the jovial, lighthearted, everything's gravy, man. Let's just relax. Let's have some fun. And whereas Harden is just like
his name. Doesn't take the whole thing as seriously as the rest
of it. No, he's just more chill and relaxed. And as the story starts, and he's kind of the Joker, as they say, or the kind of, I would say the class clown, but a little bit of a clown. You know, he's got hookers lined up for later use. He's, you know, he's all about the morale of the troop.
Yeah, he's a people person.
What's happening here, though, is I want to show you this scene. That's right. This is the scene where the guy fires at a commander as a joke.
See what I mean? We have a long, noble military tradition.
Hey, Casper! Knock it off!
And you're fired.
Don't, you damn dumb son of a.
Can you imagine if that happened in real life? You got this guy to say, hey, Sergeant, the guy's name that did the shooting with the blanks with the M16 was a character named Stucky. Now Stucky, he's going to.
It doesn't matter what movie, people called Stucky are always a problem.
Yeah, no kidding. So he fires those blanks. That's what you heard or saw, depending on if you're watching this on YouTube or not. So he just fires those blanks at the sergeant. Bad news, but this will come into play later. This guy is bad news later. You could almost argue a lot of what happens later in this film started from what he did. He certainly escalated the situation. Okay.
This is a military exercise. The first thing you see is crappy leadership. You see a sergeant pawning off responsibility to his subordinate. You see the subordinate not up to the task. He gets pranked by his own men. He fails to reprimand these men on this behavior. It's no surprise that further on down the line, he runs into problems trying to extricate these men out of the dismal situation they get in. I mean, they stop listening to him. Not that he knows what to do, but in terms of the exercise and later the situation they are in, the only way they can survive is by acting as a team, and they're not. They're not at the start, and certainly not at the end.
Now, what their exercise is actually just a basic, for what I understand, it was just a basic, we call it topography here. I don't know if what you call it there or even in the States, but topography is just basically, you got a, they call it a recon. It's a, what they're doing is they got a point on the map that they're supposed to get to, so they travel through the wilderness, then they use coordinates and bearings, and they look at their map, and that comes into play later, like, who's got the compass? And they did a really bad job of figuring out where to go or how to get there. So that's all it was. It was just supposed to be a, where point
the
A.
Veteran,
we're supposed to go
the
to
so-called
point
decorated
B.
sergeant, who is respected by his men or something, gets them lost. He gets them lost.
Yeah, he gets them lost.
What kind of sergeant are you? And he's a staff sergeant as well.
Plot-wise, they get to where they were supposed to be or close to where they're supposed to be, but it's been washed out, I think, or there's a lot of water where they're supposed to be, or they have to get through the water. Basically, they are kind of lost or whatever.
They probably walked into the wrong direction right from the start.
Possibly. So they get
to... They had no clue where they were.
No.
Nobody ever said, well, which way's north? Ever. During the entire movie. Which way's north? Nobody checked that. Nobody cared. No, we just have to get to the road and just walk in circles.
So they get to where they think they're supposed to be, or they know they're not where they're supposed to be because it's not matching the map or what have you. And what they get to is a body of water. And so they figure, well, we should cross the water and or go around the water. Going around the water, we'll get more lost and it'll take more time. Or we can just borrow these canoes that just happen to be here. It's like a little campsite they're at. And there's some discussion, of course, and we're starting to see already. And this is where, again, I went in blind. So I'm thinking, okay, there's three canoes here. You know, it looks like someone's made camp. And they're already talking about, well, the owners won't mind. We'll leave a note. I love that. We'll leave a note.
Yeah, it shouldn't even be a discussion. You are stealing.
Yes.
This is larceny. This is just not happening.
Well, that's what I love is they're just National Guards. These guys are shop owners or teachers or whatever on the side. They're just
Also a bunch of thugs, aren't they?
They're just local people in the area that they're doing their weekend training, and they're in the forest, and there's civilian watercraft here. They should be like, hey, we're lost. We might have to go somewhere else. And a couple of the guys did say that here. They're like, no, we're not going to steal these canoes. Like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, this is somebody's property. People were thinking like that, but they were overrun by the leadership. You know,
yes,
the others.
And then groupthink starts to happen.
There you go. Yeah.
They start to convince each other, well, this is the only way. And then that crooked, bad sergeant who probably doesn't give a shit about this whole job just sort of shrugs and says, well, let's take the canoes. Just leave a note. And so the coach, Bowden, has to write a note.
Yeah.
Now, as we've seen before and as we'll see later, Private Bowden isn't good for anything. He's not in his right mind, so he should not be writing notes to anybody, really. I think if we looked at that note, it would be probably stick figures drawn with an X. Not that it matters, because these people who would, if they'd even read that note, they speak a different language, because they're in Cajun country, and these people are very secluded. You get the sense that they really live a sheltered existence in this bayou, in this swamp, that they have no real contact with the outside world. So these green-clad men carrying guns are interlopers, and they're stealing their shit. So no matter if they leave a note, it won't make a difference. At no point does anybody in this group grasp this concept. Like, gee, we're in the middle of nowhere. We have no idea what people live here, and now we're stealing their shit. This won't backfire on us. This won't have any consequences. We'll just do what we want.
No consequences. So they take the boat. They're out there paddling along. And then they see a group of men come to the shore.
Yeah. And, well, guess what happens? The owners of the boat show up. And they notice, oh, it's them. The owners of the boat. And so they start yelling at these people. It's like, hey, you just read the note, dude. Ah.
Hey,
it was your note, buddy.
Maybe they only speak French.
Well, does anybody speak French?
Yeah. Voulez-vous fuck me?
Reese, knock that shit off. We're bringing them back. We're bringing them back.
Let them have it. Take no prisoners.
Firing offense part two.
So the same guy that shot Casper, pretend with the blanks at the camp, did it again at the locals. Now the locals, rightfully so, and why would they think otherwise, have no idea that what he's firing is blanks. It sounds like bullets. It looks like, it looks like a real weapon. It is a real weapon, firing blanks. And these guys have just fired on these locals, and they die for cover, rightfully so, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to trust it with my body. I'm going to hide. Peter Coyote, by the way, he's playing, of course, the leader of this group, and he seems to be pretty okay of a leader, but something's going to happen to him very quickly here.
Casper, get your boat over to that point of land now.
So they start taking off the land.
Yeah, this is really what you want to do, is de-escalate the situation. Then.
Now, the sergeant just got JFK'd. I mean, his head exploded like a watermelon. That, when I saw that for the first time, I was like, whoa! I know Walter Hill is known for violence in his films. I was not expecting that. I bet you there's a lot of moviegoers probably back in 81 who saw it. When the few that maybe did see this film back in the day in the theaters, they might have been like, whoa! What did we just see here? That kind of violence for a mainstream film, you know, it's still kind of, even today, I wanted to say the reason why I love this film and films of this time is because it is gritty and dark. You don't have that feeling of today's films anymore, that guerrilla type feeling of filming. You know, this film was filmed in the swamps. It's real swamps. There's no, mm-hmm. there's no set here. That's what I love about this film. The set
there
is
no
the,
set anywhere.
There's no set all, anywhere.
All outside.
I love that.
I think the only sets they had were maybe the interior of the village.
Sure, some of the dance sequences, what have you, the party goers. But I wonder, too. But yeah, that's what I love about this film is the mm-hmm. actors, the film crew, everyone is in these swamps, in this environment. It just adds to that grittiness and gnarliness.
It took them 3 months to film all this stuff. Because guess what? Shooting in a swamp is not great. No. Apparently, they had camera setups that would just start sinking. They had a lot of first takes that they just had to use otherwise because there was no way to reset it because their cameras had sunk into the, got stuck in the mud. So it was a disaster in many ways. So it's kind of a miracle that this movie even got finished. You know, you can tell from the performance of the actors how hard everybody worked. Actors are working hard, and those are usually the most coddled people on the set, right?
Sure.
And imagine how hard the grips are working. Imagine how hard the sound guys are working, the lighting guys, the cinematographer. They have to set up all this stuff. I mean, they are there before the actors show up, and they're still cleaning up after everybody leaves. This was a brutal shoot, and it's in a swamp, so there's going to be bugs, and there's going to be all kinds of stuff in there. You're standing in shit. Everything you touch is dirty. All your clothes get dirty. You're wet all the time.
Yeah, I love the aesthetics of how it looks. The scene right here. I just love how it looks, the swamp, the trees.
They don't make them like this anymore.
No, it's a cliche to say that, but it's true. They don't. And watching this film with 2022 eyes, it just reminds me, boy, I just kind of miss when films were gritty and dark and brutal. And they didn't mm-hmm. cater to people's sensibilities necessarily. They said things that are inappropriate, things that we couldn't repeat. And I don't mean that things have to be that way, but I like how in the dialogue, things are just said. They just say what they say.
That's how people talk.
You're right.
This is 1973.
Right.
That's how people talk.
Yeah, but if they made the movie today about 1973, they still wouldn't represent 73 the way they did in 81.
Yes, and that's at the detriment of this time period, and that's why I barely watch movies anymore. That, and they're pretty much not made anymore. If a movie project is made now, it's a miniseries of 8 episodes instead of a 90 or a 100-minute feature.
So they come across a shack in the woods as they're carrying the body of their dead sergeant. They're traveling. Now they're traveling by foot, carrying on the stretcher the dead body. Leave no man behind, right? They didn't bury him out there just yet. They will later because there's going to be too many bodies. They find a shack. And, of course, now this is where I know Walter Hill said, this is not an allegory of Vietnam. Okay, fine. But this is an allegory of any war or any conflict. I don't care what you say, Walter Hill, because...
Yeah, this is me lying.
He said it's not. And he told the crew, if anyone mentions it again, I don't want to hear about it. So people didn't even want to hear... Mm. He didn't want to hear about it on set. But that's fine. That's his prerogative. But as a first-time viewer, this just screams. Like I said, if you were just to replace, literally, like some alternate universe, the Cajuns with Viet Cong, because they weren't able to communicate, they were misunderstood, they have a different culture, it would work.
The public perception of what happened in Vietnam and how that My Lai incident happened, and this is, there's another element here, and that's the vindictiveness of the movie maker who probably has an axe to grind with the National Guard. Don't forget that many people in Hollywood are very liberal, were protesters, war protesters in the 60s, early 70s, and were activists. You end up meeting a lot of people in uniform who are sent to quell your little uprising. Especially in the late 60s, there are a lot of incidents where the National Guard were unprofessional, shot at civilians, killed civilians. The Watts riots is a famous incident. In many ways, this is Hollywood's vengeance on the National Guard by portraying them as idiots, as dunces, as unprofessional, as xenophobic thugs. In some ways, this movie does a disservice to the people who, I think most of them, work very hard.
Sure. Yeah.
And are only in the National Guard to protect their state and to protect their homes and to contribute to their community.
Right. Yeah, these six guys don't represent the whole Guard.
No, but they do represent Hollywood's view on the National Guard and on the military in general.
Sure.
Most of the movies that are made by Hollywood have to be anti-war. If it's not anti-war, then we're not making it. It has to have a message. It has to have the message of, well, this was all wrong. Well, maybe. Or you make a movie to represent reality and show reality for what it was. And if you view it from that perspective, these people talk like that. Guys in an army unit, it's locker room talk. I'm sorry. It's just, you don't want to hear it, don't listen to it. But when you're in an army unit, you can't stop yourself from hearing all that stupid shit. You have dumb colleagues. And that's one of the things you see happening in this unit. These people hate each other. They're thrown together.
Yeah.
They're mismatched. They're inequipped mentally to deal with the situation. And they're not working as a team. And they're not accepting each other's differences. And they're not accepting each other's part in the play. And that's one of the reasons why everything goes so horribly wrong, especially in this situation where they just lost their senior officer. The guy got killed. Everybody's scared. Everybody's freaking out. What is everybody going to say? How are we going to get this guy home? What are we going to do now? And so they come upon this shack and they immediately assume, well, the guy in that shack, well, he must have done it. And that's all the brain power they put in it. Everybody just assumes, well, he must have done it, or he must know something or something. So we'll just act. We won't think. We won't process what just happened. We won't come up with a good plan. We won't warn anybody. We won't try to contact anybody. No, 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 no. We'll just act because that's how we feel right now. And everything just goes to hell.
I really love the soundtrack of this movie as well. I think I got the right timestamp here. I just want to let the audience hear that soundtrack. I think it comes up right after the scene.
Four of them with automatic rifles against some swamp rat. I'll make it even money.
Just adds that atmosphere.
Natural but very eerie sounds.
Yeah.
And they use birds as well. Especially whenever you hear birds, startled birds, there's always something that's about to happen. Shit's going to go down.
So
here we have
is that
the late, great Brian James.
Yeah, so Coach goes in with his weapon firing, and they go to arrest this guy. So he's a local Cajun in the area, just working in his quote-unquote yard.
Probably had nothing to do with it.
No.
Or maybe he did. We don't know.
Well, we don't even know at the end of the film if he did or didn't. I actually don't think exactly. He did. Later in the film, he does let those two go. I think when he was traveling with them as a prisoner, he recognized that Hardin and Spencer seemed to be the most logical and the least offensive of the group.
They saved his ass, pretty much.
Right. Yeah, he was being drowned in the river by Reese, and Hardin saved that from happening and actually went, you know, mm-hmm. killed the guy. So he was shown mercy by the Cajun later, this Cajun that they have a prisoner of war. So I don't think that he was a part of the hunting, but he's definitely a part of the village.
He owed blood. He owed the two men who survived. He owed them their lives.
So the coach goes crazy here with this shack. He goes inside, and this shack was supposed to be a big hopeful place for the soldiers because it had ammunition, it had supplies, it had food and what had you. So, again, another spoils of war moment, right? You know, to the victor goes the spoils.
They just want to steal all this shit. It was a pretty effective little raid we had there. What makes you think you can just take it? First of all, I never understood why they were arresting him, because really, do they have that kind of authority? No.
No, they don't.
They weren't ordered to do that. Then we just requisition all his stuff. Why? Why? On what grounds?
It's a great explosion, by the way. I love that.
Yeah.
You can almost see the camera shake when it does explode. It looked like a legit good demolitions by whoever did that. So they blew up the shack. The coach thought that he just wanted to destroy
That'd
something.
That'd be funny. He was teased at the start of the movie that he didn't have a sense of humor. So now he's showing everybody how funny he can be.
Yeah, let's blow things up.
Yeah, a couple of minutes from now, he's going to ask the two brighter guys in the group, well, you got it, right? You got the joke. And they were like, well, I don't know what to tell you.
It's been hours since they've gotten this prisoner, blew up the shack. There's still only the one victim, and that was the original Peter Coyote character.
That's the guy from E.T.
1 year later, he's in E.T. So he goes from a very underseen film into one of the biggest films of all time. So they're still looking for the highway. They are lost. What do you think of this dog attack scene? It's scary to me because these actors they're truly handling the dogs, so to speak. And I know the dogs are trained just to bite the padded arm, but I would be nervous as an actor still having these dogs around me because they are chomping
those
padded arms.
Those dogs never came near the actors. This is great editing.
Those are all stunt people?
It looks really nasty.
Think those are all stunt people?
Dog handlers.
Yeah. I thought I read in trivia that the actors did have a couple of them. It looked like Stucky was pretty close there. Right there. You see Powers Booth with the dog on him.
Right, Lewis Smith.
See? Yeah. So, Katie, if you're listening to this episode, well, we should have warned Katie.
Oh.
We actually should have warned Katie, don't watch this film, especially the end sequence.
Yeah, we know how Katie is with animals.
Well, that's her right. She does not believe in the killing or handling or even riding horses.
Well, I'm the same way. This is one of the reasons I really watched this. It's like, okay, what are they doing to the dogs here? I'm a kind of a dog guy, so I really don't like it when they portray dogs as vicious or...
So we're led to believe, did the hunters sick those dogs on them? Just say, go get them, then come back? Are they toying with these soldiers?
Of course they are.
You're going to get those kind of dog bites. The fact that they were able to, they did mention, my arm's kind of, but there was no mention again later in the film of any kind of arm damage. The way those dogs were truly chomping on their arms, they should have been incapacitated for the rest of the film.
And they looked fairly gnarly, those dogs, so you're looking at tetanus shots for that.
When a dog bites, man, I think those are Rottweilers, when they bite,
yep.
Oof, I would imagine that's extremely, you would be in so much pain. But they just kind of walk it off like a bee sting.
Well, they're tough National Guardsmen, right?
Okay, this is the part here where, for some reason, Bowden's now gone crazy. He's now reached some sort of boiling point of, that's the coach, the guy that blew up the shack. He's now gone silent. He's not speaking anymore. And I don't think he speaks for the rest of the film. Makes his acting job pretty good.
It's not the fact that he blows up a shack, that he blows up someone's private property. No, it's the fact that he's suddenly silent. That's what freaks out his colleagues the most. He's not talking anymore. He must be crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Well, this is where the paranoia sets in. I mean, they've just been attacked by dogs. They don't know who did that. Maybe he's friends of the trapper or something. Who knows? He's not talking. He speaks a different language, apparently. So these guys are starting to lose their mind.
What do you think of Casper's leadership? Now, he's now the leader of the squad because of the death of...
He's a disaster. He's about the last guy you want with you on a camping trip, especially if there's a bear loose in the woods, right? You know that guy is just going to...
This is the sequence here, of course, where Reese, played by... what's the guy's name? Fred Ward or something? Or
Yeah, Fred Ward.
Yeah, he's a character actor, of course. He was in the famous Tremor films. You might remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Remo, Unarmed and Dangerous, one of my favorite films. I'm also going to cover that one at some point. I love that movie.
What's it called?
Remo, Unarmed and Dangerous.
You haven't seen it? No.
Oh, it's amazing.
No.
Oh, you're a Star Trek buff. Catherine Janeway is in that.
Oh, yeah. Sure, I've seen everything, if that makes me a buff, but I don't see it multiple times, so I do forget a lot of characters and stuff. But, yeah, I watched Voyager. I love
Voyager.
Yes,
we know Picard and Discovery suck, but that doesn't mean you have to now say you're not a Star Trek fan. I'm a Star Trek fan of the good stuff.
I love The Next Generation and Voyager and Deep Space Nine. That, to me, those three...
Yeah, the good stuff.
That stuff was great. It was fun. I love it.
Yeah. Subsequent stuff, different story.
Now we have a knife fight between Rees and Powers Booth's character, Hardin. What did you think of this knife fight?
Again, great action sequence.
Now, I believe Hardin was acting self-defense.
No, this is not self-defense. He had him covered with his weapon, with a live round in it. So he could have just de-escalated the entire situation. But no, he got suckered into a knife fight. Now, who does that? That's just stupid.
Well, these guys have made poor choices.
You have a gun, he has a knife. You don't drop your gun and have a knife fight. It's stupid. And everybody who's been in a knife fight, or as I have, run away.
Of course you have. Why are you in a knife fight?
There's no way. Yeah, I was in a knife fight, unfortunately. And you know what happens in knife fights? Everybody gets hurt.
Sure.
It's no fun. There's no, I'm going to wrap my coat around my arm and protect my arm and use that to deflect the blows and then win. There's no way. It's a last resort. When you see a knife, run. That's what I did. That's why I'm still in one piece.
I love how the French prisoner, he gets away because of that
good
knife fight.
But that's after Hardin kills the other soldier. He murders him. This is murder. He had him covered with his M16. He could have de-escalated the situation. They could have just tied up the culprit. And instead, they got into a knife fight, and he got egged on by their French prisoner. Kill him, kill him, kill him. And he just stuck the knife right in. He stuck him so hard, the guy stuck to the tree. Okay, this is an action movie. This is an action sequence. But in reality, if this happens to a military unit, you kill your colleague over some stupid shit?
Can't do that.
No, this does not fly. And he knows it. Maybe that's how he got kicked out of his Texas National Guard unit. He has some knife fights there as well. He does like knives, doesn't he? Now they're standing at a grave and...
Too many people to carry now. Now they got three dead people.
Too many people to carry, so let's just bury them.
Yeah.
Another bright decision. They're lost. How are you going to find those people? Those bodies have to be recovered. They have to be processed. And you're sticking them in a bog.
So I love the paranoia. You talk about that paranoia. They see people walking around, and they just Sims. The guy who plays Sims, what's his name again?
Franklin Seals. Sims is played by Franklin Seals, who tragically died of AIDS at the age of 37 in 1990. So
obviously it's unfortunate that he died of that disease. He was also, what's funny, well not funny, but what's interesting, he was in Silver Spoons for quite a few seasons. He was one of the co-stars of the show Silver Spoons.
That's cool about this movie. These aren't well-known actors at that point, but you know all these actors because they're working actors. But on the other hand, they have a huge body of work.
So the soldiers have now seen the three people they just buried have now been unburied by the Cajuns and propped up, which is a pretty brutal, very scary scene. And then the trees start falling around them.
Yeah, this is the Cajuns fucking with them.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons I thought you would enjoy it, because it has so many similarities. I mean, this is basically Rambo messing with the posse that's chasing him, because he uses the terrain against his assailants. And the irony, of course, of this whole situation is they're running around with blanks in their guns. So they're shooting at people, but it's impotent. It's useless, because they're not hitting anything, because those blanks don't have a bullet. The only bullets they had, they wasted, because one of the guys had a box of ammo so they could shoot deer with it.
So Casper has one homemade grenade that he didn't make on the first night. So he's going to throw this one homemade grenade at the one person running around. I don't even think he hits him or nothing.
Yeah.
It's kind of a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sims gets impaled by some wooden trap, and that's very a la First Blood with the wooden spikes. I thought it was a great use of wooden spikes. However, Hardin and Spencer, do they shoot somebody? I think they had about four rounds, as they said.
Yeah, they kill people.
Yeah, so they got one Cajun there.
another murder.
Self-defense, come on.
Yeah, right. Okay, this would not be proper procedure.
In what way?
You fire a warning shot. Order the person to stand down, to drop their weapon, and when they don't, that's the point where you start aiming for their legs or some other body part that won't kill them, but will put them out of commission. No, they shoot to kill.
Yeah. I love this running sequence here. I know people, if you're not watching this on YouTube, but I just love the way they run in the water because it's very hard to run in this water, but the way they kind of run with their knees high, it just kind of looks almost comical as the actors are like running with their knees high. It just kind of looks like comical running without the water.
Yeah, that they have to clear their boots from the water in order to move. Yeah. Yeah, well, it does reinforce that they're kind of foolish. And that's the power of this movie. It's these guys are not heroes. These are not people we cheer for. As a matter of fact, when I'm watching this movie, I'm cheering for the Cajuns. I want those guys to get their comeuppance.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you bring up cheering. I don't think I was, as a first-time viewer, I was sad, you know, that more than anything. Meaning, like, again, I did relate it to the Vietnam conflict. It was easy for me as a viewer to do that. So I looked at it as
Walter doesn't want you to do that.
Well, Walter can
Not do that. Well, let's leave Vietnam out of it.
No.
Let's just say these are soldiers training in the woods, and they're set upon by a bunch of psychotics.
Well, I'm going to tell you how I felt.
Socially ill-behaved people.
Sequel, if you'll allow me, can I tell you how I felt watching it? Okay. When I saw this film, I was sad, meaning like – because it's just – I hate to say it's a bunch of misunderstanding, but it is. It's like people are fooling around, and then they have their preconceived notions of how – both sides of how people are supposed to act or how people should act. There's no real communication. There's a lot of allegory here. I'm sure we could take hours and hours dissecting. But the idea is you have two groups of people – highly misunderstanding the other in two different cultures and way of thinking. Militarily speaking, they're doing everything wrong. Maybe the National Guard is going to take all these events and really change how they do things because everything's gone off the rails. Yes, but if
this is where Stucky drowns because he ran into a swamp.
It's quicksand. They don't use quicksand anymore the way they used to in films. But this is good classic 80s quicksand. Here we go. Yep. Anyways, I just wanted to say, so I wasn't rooting for the Cajuns so much as I felt it's disheartening thinking of these characters' motives of like it's everyone is just being brutal. I liked it. Don't get me wrong.
But they lose their humanity.
Yeah, sadness wasn't not enjoying. I loved the film and I enjoyed it immensely. But thinking of the characters' motives and who, what's going on here, what both parties are understanding what's going on, it's just you knew that it wasn't going to be a quote unquote happy ending. Everyone dies by the traps and all the stuff that the occasions are done. But
yes, it's a great. It's like a slasher film.
Yeah, exactly.
They just get it one by one. I was cheering every time. I was like, yes.
Sure.
Stucky dies. Yes. He deserves it because it's his fault. If Stucky had been arrested for misbehaving during on the firing range, which wasn't the firing range,
right?
The sergeant would have lived. This whole thing might not have happened.
Yeah, of course. So as far as I didn't feel bad for what happened.
You're a dick, Stucky.
Yeah, I didn't
feel. You deserve what you got.
Yeah, he started this whole thing. His carelessness, absolutely. This film got really tense, which I loved. I loved the ending. It's a fantastic ending. Mm. So you have the survivors. So the survivors are Spencer and Hardin, played by Keith Carradine.
Yeah, the bright
ones. Keith Carradine and Powers Booth, just so people are tracking.
Powers Booth.
So these two guys, they've survived. They're in a village. They asked for a truck to take them to a town with a telephone. Of course, they didn't. They went to the Cajun town, probably the main Cajun hubbub or community in this area. And they're treated nicely. As you can tell, they're just, hey, go wash up, have a couple beers, hang out with us, dance with us. And they do, but you know as a viewer, like, okay, because there's like 8 minutes left in the film. Like, there's no way they're just going to, become a part of the community? No. Something's going on here. During the dance sequence, of course, Keith Carradine sees these hunters coming on their boats into shore. And he's like, oh, I think these are the hunters. This is their community. But what I love is what we're seeing. This is where Katie, if you're watching this film or going to watch this film, you might want to fast forward a couple scenes because they show you a live butchering of a pig on screen, which is kind of hard to watch if you're not used to it. I mean, I eat meat, so it'd be hypocritical of me to say that I can't watch it. So I watched it with like, that's how they kill pigs. There's no way to gut a pig. You have to gut a pig.
The way they do it You are led to believe that's what's going to happen to those two guys.
I totally agree. So that's what I love about this film. They show you two nooses are being made. But then what's cool is once you realize...
Oh, it's for the pig. All right.
But once you realize that as a viewer, that's all fine and dandy. But it still acts as an allegory of that's what maybe should or will happen to these guys if they stick around. And yes, they are around. They're not going to get hung necessarily. The hunters are after these guys still. They know that they're here. And this is when it turns into a bit of a... another little action sequence where Powers Booth and Keith Carradine's characters are hunted down by the hunters in the community. And what I love is the music's playing, there's dancing going on, and it kind of drowns out the violence that's happening around these community. But there was a part of me that thought, I think they knew it was happening. What do you think?
Most people have no clue what's happening.
Okay.
They're just at a party. Some of them, maybe, because those hunters were called in. It's not an accident that they're there. It's like, oh, they're in the village now. Oh, good. We'll get them there, right? Who knows? It's ambiguous on purpose.
Now they know they're being hunted by the hunters. It's obvious now. Hardin is in, he's trying to look a way out of the town here, I guess, and Sonny Chiba.
Yeah.
You recognize Sonny Chiba?
No, now that I think about it, you know, those villagers must have been into it. I mean, look how weird they're dancing.
Yes, they're really loud and noisy.
Right? Because that's the xenophobic vibe you're supposed to get from this.
These people are off here. Exactly, that's what I mean. There's something, there you go, there's a nice disembowelment scene of the pig there.
Yeah.
Well, hey, that's how they make your pork chops. Now here we got Sonny Chiba. Is it Sonny Chiba? What's
Sonny Landham.
Landham. Chiba's the other, that's the Japanese actor, yeah.
That's a Japanese gentleman.
Yeah, so Sonny Landham, who's still alive, I think, is he?
No, sorry.
Well, you have to apologize. Why would you apologize?
Sonny's not with us anymore.
Oh, that's fine. I never knew him. Yeah, he passed away recently. I don't think it was that long ago, I don't think. This was an early role. He, of course, played that famous role in Predator, which is a film I know you'll be covering on your Arnold podcast. So
absolutely.
It's Arnold's best film of all time. That's my opinion.
And he's also in Lock Up with Stallone.
Yes, that's right. He plays the baddie in that. So gets stabbed in the nuts here. That's great. Nice
poor
violent.
Sonny.
Yeah, poor Sonny.
Sonny always gets it.
So at the end of the sequence here of the film, we have, of course, the two main characters. I thought Powers Booth was going to die here, but he doesn't. Keith Carradine's
He has a lot more killing to do.
He does. So I love the sequence, though, because now we have a real, like, balls to the wall. The two surviving soldiers are just fighting the hunters. Like, no more hunters. Because the hunters the whole time, this whole film, 90% of the film, 95% of the film, they've been off in the distance. Now, finally, at the very end, in their home territory, we've got this real physical...
Which is normal for hunters. You don't see the kill.
Oh, there you go.
When you're a buck in the woods, you don't see the bullet coming. That's the whole point. You never see the hunter.
So now we've got hunter and hunty battling it out, and I love it. What's your thoughts on the final sequence here of the helicopter that's coming and the truck? Why do they slow it all down? What's your thoughts on all that?
That's because the men running towards the helicopter don't know if that truck is friendly or not. It could be more hunters. They don't know.
Obviously, we as the viewer see it's a U.S. Army truck. So are you saying they don't know it's an Army truck yet? They know that's not a Cajun copter.
Well, the camera shows us that it's an Army truck. We see the American star on it, right? The Army star. But they might not be able to see that. They're just looking at a truck and is like, is it our truck? Is that helping? Are those friendly? Are they coming to help us? Or is this it? So it's a really cool ending. We're left with their last sentiments. They're still in survival mode. They're still like, okay, do we run or do we run towards the truck or do we run away from the truck? That's really the... And then they finally look at each other and like, oh, okay.
Is this a happy ending?
Well, not for them. They murdered... Not for them.
Well, they're not going to admit that. Do you think they're going to admit that?
This is going to be an inquiry. And those guys they have a lot of explaining to do. Everybody else died. The entire platoon died.
Yeah, but
what happened, guys?
They have no witnesses.
Of course they do. Trapper will show up and they'll have a French interpreter because he will start saying, well, no, I don't speak English. So that and forensic evidence. Well, there wasn't much forensic evidence, of course, back in 1973. But still, I mean, he stuck a knife into his colleague. Even when he was questioned, he was like, well, you know, it was self-defense, right? You had to kill him. And I don't want to talk about it. Really?
Well, we're at the end. And I want to say, first and foremost, I love this film. So thank you so much for suggesting
I'm gratified. I'm very gratified.
It's the kind of films where, this is a real surprise because I didn't even know this film existed. Didn't even know, it was never in my, and I would suspect when this film comes up on the feed and people see Last of the Action Heroes hyphen Southern Comfort, I wonder how many people would be like, oh, of course, that movie. Like, I would suspect a handful of listeners.
No. People who listen to my podcasts are always men and women of great taste and culture. So they will have seen the film.
Oh, man.
People who listen to your stuff, I'm not so sure, but now they're educated.
Is your animosity towards me and Sly, or just me?
No, not at all. I have no animosity towards either of you.
Well, you just called all my listeners uncultured or something. This movie bombed for a reason.
I'm just saying that my listeners are cultured.
Oh, knowing Southern Comfort makes you a cultured person?
Yes, because it's a classic. Because it's good. It's that good. It does help that Walter Hill directed it. And Walter Hill has now become legendary. But at the time, he was, well, he'd done The Warriors and he was about to do 48 Hours. But he hadn't made his mark yet. So ironically, this is one of his best films. If you are into movies by Walter Hill, you're really going to enjoy this one.
I loved it. Despite you calling out my listeners, which you are one of. Yeah,
that's true.
I did enjoy this film immensely. So for the record, Siegel, and anyone that listens to the show, I have never claimed to be a film connoisseur. I love films and I love movies, but there's a lot I haven't seen. One, there's just so much time in the day, and especially the last 20 years since I've been married with kids, my film viewing has, like, my first 20 years, I probably saw more films my first 20 years I probably will see for the rest of my life. Like, I saw a lot of films because there's no internet back when I was a teenager. So I would go to the movie store and I would rent like 10 movies and watch them all week at a time.
Well, I loved First Blood. And you'd go to the video store and you'd want to rent First Blood. But sometimes it wouldn't be there.
Right.
So you'd have to pick something else.
I'd never even seen this on a video store.
Well, it was basically the video store where I would rent stuff. Southern Comfort would be right next to First Blood because it's in the same.
Yeah.
Wheelhouse. It's in the same genre.
You know what it probably was? Is even when I was renting movies, I actually went on my way to rent movies that were outside of my wheelhouse. So I saw a lot of films that weren't action films back in the day.
That's how I saw Brubaker, for example.
It's just
something I took a chance on. Have you ever seen that with Robert Redford?
No.
Amazing film. That's how I saw Walking Tall.
I've only seen the Rock one, which is
you should watch the original. The one with the Rock sucks.
It was fun. I enjoyed it. It's a fun film. I know it's not.
Yeah, because they steal all the good stuff from the original.
Of course he did. And I haven't seen the Walking Tall in like 10 years plus. So if I see the original, it'll be like seeing it for the first time. Like, I don't remember any of the beats. I just remember a stick, the 4x4 or whatever. As always, Siegel, I don't know if you really enjoy podcasting with me or not. It's hard to tell, but I do appreciate.
Well, we sure do it a lot.
I do appreciate your thoughts and your insights. You're very knowledgeable on the film.
Thank you.
And I hope our listeners did enjoy what we had to say about the film. But overall, this is a great film. It's hard to place it as it's almost like it's a Vietnam film without being a Vietnam film. I want to make that clear. But it has all the beats and feelings. So if you like.
Stop saying that. Walter does not want you to say that.
Walter can pound sand.
What did you just say?
Let me just get this out. If you still listen to this whole episode and you still want to watch the film, I want to let you know, if you're a Vietnam film buff, or sorry, not buff, but like you like Hamburger Hill and Platoon and Apocalypse Now, that was me. I'm just saying that was me. I was familiar and enjoyed those big Vietnam films. I love war movies in general. I'm just saying this is not a Vietnam film or a war film, but it is what I'm saying. It's hard to explain.
Yeah.
Like, if you like those films, you'll watch this and it feels like it, though it isn't one, but you'll like it because you like Vietnam.
Yeah, it's about the psychology or soldiering gone awry.
In 48 hours.
In 40 hours. It's a pressure cooker of a film. It's haunting. It has excellent editing.
Like,
it has excellent sound. It's a tremendous movie.
Yeah. All right.
So I'm very happy you liked it, because I'm always worried that whenever I make a suggestion, you won't.
Oh, I dare not like something you suggest. Boy, I don't want you to beat me up or have you troll me any more than you already do. Before we go, why don't you plug your projects?
Of course, I'm working hard on the second season of Mel Gibson. Hugging the Cactus and Mel Gibson podcast. There is a lot of work and a lot of research to be done. I really don't want to disappoint anyone. I've gotten some great feedback, And there are also a lot of people waiting for the season to come out as soon as possible, but it's going to be a little bit more work. So in the meantime, I'm working on our summer blockbuster, which is a four-part dissection of the career of Arnold Schwarzenegger, how he went from sports figure to the biggest box office draw of the early 90s. That'll be multiple seasons as well, because we are really enjoying it. Aside from that, I'm just doing small projects like this one, like the one I just did with Katie, which was Romancing the Stone. It has gotten a lot of listeners. Katie and I have decided to actually do the sequel as well.
Nice, there you go.
So, yes, we're hoping to do that one in the fall. Of course, Karate Kid is coming up. Highlander is coming up.
Good stuff. That stuff might already be out. So if you're listening to this because you're a big Walter Hill fan or Southern Comfort fan, we invite you to listen to all those episodes on the feed. Just go on the feed.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of movies to choose from and topics. I think if you're an action film buff from the 80s and 90s, this feed is for you. So a lot
yes,
of great
and
podcasts.
Stay tuned because we are a little bit into the 70s as well. Mm-hmm. And I am a big Warriors fan, which is also one of the better Walter Hill films, and we will be covering it sooner rather than later.
There you go. All right.
Okay, so thanks everybody for listening, and bye for now.
Bye-bye.